Beast.
All right. Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone commented on the video today that like they try to mimic me. They try to mirror me when I do the intro to the what's cracking, and they get it so wrong every time. I gotta keep them on their toes. What's cracking, big dogs? Welcome bike to the channel. Welcome bike to the headquarters. This is the Bunk Bed Breakdowns podcast, featured film, whatever you want to call it. It is coming out Monday. This is a one-time thing. It will normally be bike on our Wednesday schedule, but we've had some logistical complications thanks to me and terrible organizing and scheduling, whatever it is. It's out Monday, so you guys get the entire week to digest it. And we're filming this on Sunday night. The Packers and Saints are playing right now. So anything that happens in that game, anything that happens Monday night, we have not seen yet. But what we're going to do is quickly kind of just go game by game through Sunday's slate and talk about some of the things that we saw, some of the players that, you know, we might be looking to buy low, sell high, all that kind of shit that we normally do on a week-by-week basis. It's just going to be a conversation between us three idiots. How we feeling, boys?
Feeling great. I love that compliment, being called an idiot right off the rip.
Hey, it's okay because I call myself one, so we're on even playing field for now.
I like it. It sets the bar really low, so when I don't know what I'm talking about, it like fits the narrative real well.
Michael?
Let's get it, boys. Fucking ready.
All right, I'm going to hit the intro.
Wild week.
All right, so we're going to take this game by game, and we're going to dive in, and we'll talk. I guess, Noah, you already put something out for the Thursday night game, right?
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to skip through that, and oh, my God, the first game on the list. Okay, number one. Guys, I'm going to say this for, like, the fourth straight week. I expect these things from the Falcons. Like, I stopped expecting anything that will make me feel in a positive light regarding the Falcons, okay? I'm getting the last comment I got on my Instagram was someone I'm gonna pull it up actually. Someone dropped a phone number on my last Instagram comment, and I looked up what the phone number was, and it was a suicide hotline number.
Todd Gurley scored a touchdown though.
Todd Gurley did fall into the end zone there, but so did Brian Hill. Brian Hill busted off a 35-yard touchdown run, looked fast, and as I tweeted out, Todd Gurley
looks fucking washed. Todd Gurley looks fucking washed.
Just so bad. He came into the game with zero broken tackles on his like 37 touches this year. But being in the Falcons offense, like this is the nature of what Todd Gurley might give you on a week-to-week basis. He's not going to be contributing in the passing game anymore. He's not really going to give you explosive runs. And you're going to have to kind of go into the game knowing that you're either getting like an RB3 or if he scores a touchdown, maybe a high-end RB2. Right now, with a Gurley, someone like that, are you just going to kind of let him sit there and enjoy your flex spot, or are you looking to ship him off immediately based on, like, just what we're seeing here and the shares backfield?
Good luck shipping him off, man. He's washed. I mean, I have him in our BDG Dynasty League. I'm probably just going to let him be that depth flex piece. I mean, he's basically Jordan Howard now. So, I mean, you just got to play with it what it is. I mean, depth is important. Like, he still has value. But, like, no one's going to pay you, like, a first for him. And, like, if you're contending, like, you know, maybe you get a second for him if you can. But I'm not even sure you can get that, to be honest.
What about redraft, though? Are we looking to move him? I'd be trying to dump him right now.
Oh, yeah. I would package him up with, like, another wide receiver, another running back to try and get an upgrade. I would package him up with somebody, try and get James Robinson if I could.
Yeah, good fucking luck. People who have David Robinson know who he is now. They got a fucking RB1 off the waiver wire. But in that same game, I mean, the bigger storyline is this. Nick Foles comes in for Mitch Trubisky, comes up and lights the Falcons past the up, which is like, yeah, you know, that's bare minimum if you're an NFL quarterback. You better fucking do that. And that's why Mitch Trubisky gets benched. But Terry Cohen, supposedly, I don't think we have official word yet, but probably tears his ACL. So within that game, I think – like a Todd Gurley for a David Montgomery flip makes a lot of sense there. If you could try to pull that off, I don't know if, you know, the David Montgomery owners is stupid enough in your league to do that, but you could probably add a piece on top of that because Tariq Cohen goes out and then David Montgomery pretty much becomes the every down back. He was targeting him downfield. He got like a fucking wheel route that was into the end zone. It was just like some trust that you saw between Nick Foles and his weapons there, and especially with David Montgomery. But we got our bounce back for Allen Robinson. 13 targets, yep. 10 catches, 123 yards, and a touchdown. And like all summer, we had been hyping up A-Rob. We're like, this is it. This is his time. We got elite wide receiver. We just need to wait till Nick Foles gets under center. Nick Foles gets under center, Allen Robinson pops off. So, like, thoughts on this game right now? We got three cone injury, and then we got Nick Foles taking over this team. Oh, wait. Also, they came out and said they're not announcing who the starting quarterback is for next week yet.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Do you think there's any chance Trubisky gets the job back? Like, the guy was the former number two overall pick. They give him the reins to lead the offense in the first 2 weeks. They're 3-0, and he got benched. So this team is – I don't see any reason for them to go back to him. And as you said, he's so – like, Nick Foles isn't a good quarterback. But when you compare it to Mitchell Trubisky, anybody looks good. He made Jimmy Graham look like he was 25 again. He had 6 for 60 and 2 touchdowns. And I'm not sure he can run any faster than Todd Gurley at this point in his career. So I'm thinking that this passing game is going to be looking up. As far as David Montgomery goes, to me, he actually looked decent the first 2 weeks. I didn't see much of this game at all. But he looked decent.
Their O-line has looked a lot better than I've expected it to look for some reason. Like, you know, they didn't add any pieces to it, but they've just, I guess, progressed. And they've looked a lot better than what most of us are giving them credit for going in.
Yeah, and he does have a tough schedule coming up. He faces the Bucs, the Rams, the Saints, but peppered in or sprinkled in between those games is the Panthers, the Titans, the Vikings, the Green Bay Packers, the Lions. So there are a couple of favorable matchups there. If you can flip a Todd Gurley for a David Montgomery, I definitely go for it. And the thing about flipping David Montgomery, just touching back on the Falcons offense, is we saw Chris Carson go down, and there's been so many injuries to running backs lately that I'd bet that somebody had like a Chris Carson, Saquon Barkley, or Christian McCaffrey type of stack. So if they miss both their running backs now, you can probably flip them to that roster for a good running back or a good receiver. And I think that offers you a good buy low window for a guy like David Montgomery, who didn't really produce this past week against a soft defense.
One of my friends in the E-Town Get Down League has Saquon, Chris Carson, David Montgomery, and Todd Gurley. He's got fucking all four of the running backs you just named. So I thought that was kind of funny. Any other takeaways from the Chicago Bears Falcons game? I know, like, if you're an A-Rob owner, that's got to make you feel like super secure now. It was looking a little wobbly there because he was getting a lot of targets, but like at the end of the day, you know, just because he's getting the volume doesn't mean it's predictive, because it's coming from Mitchell Trubisky, and those are going to continue to be shitty. But Foles obviously gives him an upgrade in the passing game.
Yeah, this was a smash spot for Allen Robinson. I try to fit him into DFS wherever I could. I'd say the other interesting part of this is, like, we got a little taste of Calvin Ridley without Julio, and he fucking balled out still. So this guy is here to stay. I mean, he's killing it. He didn't get the TD, but he got another 100 yards. You know, another massive target volume, bunch of receptions. Like, this guy's a top, I mean, he's a top 12 dynasty wide receiver pretty easily. Just
Those of you that fucking drafted him, Ridley Lockett at the 4-5 turn in your redraft leagues, man, didn't even matter what you did in the first three fucking rounds.
Yeah. So, I mean, these are the wide receivers that absolutely matter. And, you know, I feel like people got a little scared because, like, we tagged him with like that Chris Godwin type rise, and everyone's like, you know, lightning doesn't strike twice. You know, obviously, and here we are, and he's fucking balling out. And I was worried about what he would look like without Julio, so I think this game was big for him, just to show that he could kind of handle that workload and that coverage, even as the lone guy. Even Russell Gage was out, right? I mean, so it's like literally just him.
Russell Gage had a concussion, yeah. So he sat for most of the game, and then it became literally just like the Calvin Ridley show. They kept forcing it to their running backs and Gurley, and that's what the game ended up being. So please don't at me or tag me when anything happens to the Falcons. I literally don't fucking care. I'm no longer a Falcons fan. We were in comeback mode. We were up 26-10 and we were in comeback mode. Like, I just felt like I feel it slipping away. Speaking of slipping away, the Buffalo Bills fucking steal one from the Los Angeles Rams, 35-32, the very, very questionable PI call at the end of the game. And Josh Allen continues his hot streak, 300 more passing yards, 4 touchdowns, another touchdown on the ground. So he tallies up 5 tugs, and Zach Moss misses one. And Devin Singletary pretty much just showed off that he was probably the better running back in that backfield up to this point and will continue to be going forward. He gets like 17 touches, goes over 120 yards from scrimmage. On the receiving side of things for the Buffalo Bills, before we hop over the Rams, Cole Beasley has been like super, super involved in this offense. I know Diggs has looked fucking awesome, and Diggs should have had an extra like 2 touchdowns in this game. He had one that was called back. Yep. I don't remember if he stepped out of bounds. There was a penalty. There was 2 touchdowns in a row he caught that both got wiped out. But he ends up still scoring a touchdown. Cole Beasley went 6 for 100. Last week he went like 5 for 70. The week before that, I think he went like 5 for 55. So he's like low key a very good wide receiver 3 in the PPR lens of things. And then Gabriel Davis is a kid that you brought up a couple weeks ago, Mike, because you were intrigued by him, and he didn't do much in the first week, but he went 4 for 81 in this one.
Yep.
And he's looking like someone, if he happens to be available on your waiver wire in Dynasty, definitely to keep an eye on. In redraft, I'm not really too intrigued by him because it's just going to be pretty much a dig show every week. You're never going to be able to tell when to throw a guy like Davis into your lineup.
Yeah, he's definitely – he shouldn't be on your waiver wire. If he is, you should definitely go and grab him. He's a great prospect and, you know, someone that I was grabbing off waivers or with, like, the last pick in my rookie drafts. But, you know, kind of like you said, I love Josh Allen. He's been proven, you know, everyone wrong. I think, like, the mistake that I made with Josh Allen, like, fading Josh Allen this year is almost as unforgivable as those who faded Lamar Jackson last year, because it's a very similar type of story arc where they're both, like, more limited in the passing game, but provide like huge rushing upside, except Josh Allen's like basically a fucking goal line back. So he's got that going for him. You know, we were going to harp on like the easy matchups or whatever, but you know, this matchup wasn't that easy. They had the Rams, and even if he has an easy matchup and he smashes, like that still shows something. So Josh Allen might be one of the top quarterbacks to finish the season. He's got a tough stretch down the road, so we'll see how that goes. But like, I mean, who cares? Cause for the first 10 weeks, it's going to be a smash every single week for him.
Where do you have him in Dynasty, Mike? I know you had Carson Wentz ahead of him. That's obviously changed now. Do you think he's like a top 5 or 6 Dynasty quarterback? Because I think that they're going to lock him up for the long term the way he's been playing.
Yeah, I don't know if he's top 6 because my top 6 hasn't really changed. But I will say like Carson Wentz is moving down and Josh Allen's moving up. Carson Wentz moved down and Joe Burrow moved up as well. So he's kind of in that like top 8 range.
I actually just started redoing my Dynasty rankings today. So we're going to completely rehaul our Dynasty rankings, whatever we've had up to this point, make sure they're completely up to date on October 1st. So if you're not a Patreon member, that is where you shall get our Dynasty rankings. We'll post them on October 1st. If you are, then we'll give you a shout out in the Discord as well as, you know, just via Patreon for our full Dynasty rankings. I got Josh Allen at QB8 right now. We have Mahomes, yep. Lamar Jackson, Kyler, Dak, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, Joe Burrow at 7, and then Josh Allen's right there, right in front of Tua. So Josh Allen is certainly – I mean, there's probably a lot of people that already had him up there, but, like, this has kind of cemented him up there. He's looked so, so fucking good. And now he's done it against a legit, like, Rams defense, so it makes you feel a lot better. I think, like, the key takeaway, to be honest, is when it comes to quarterbacks, like – everyone is fucking terrible at judging whether or not a quarterback is going to be good in the NFL, whether it's everybody on Twitter. Like, I feel like we've gotten good with running backs and wide receivers and kind of figuring them out as prospects, not obviously to a T, but way better than quarterbacks. We're just so fucking off on quarterbacks. Like, you know, we were against Josh Allen, but like everybody seems to be wildly inaccurate when it comes to quarterbacks. So like, really, there's no sure thing one way or the other. There's no sure thing that Josh Allen's going to be bad. There's also like no sure thing that like Tua is going to be good when he gets onto the field. So it's like, I think, you know, you just kind of get your guy if you like a guy. That's kind of what my outcome when it comes to quarterbacks now going forward.
Yeah, everybody's convinced that Baker Mayfield will be the next big thing. Same with Carson Wentz. Those guys have looked absolutely atrocious this year. Then you get Josh Allen, who nobody thought could throw the ball, and the guy's just slinging 3 to 4 touchdowns a week. And this is an offense, like I brought up last week when I see the Vikings and the Titans, I'm like, that's a really good defense when they stink in real life. The Bills is an offense, I think of them as like ground and pound, hard-nosed defense. They're just slinging the ball, and Josh Allen's been very efficient this season. He's been very accurate, which is kind of surprising to me because he hadn't shown any of that through his first 2 years in the league. So this is a really potent offense, and I know Mike had said it earlier that, you know, week 1 and 2, they had very easy opponents in the Jets and the Miami Dolphins. But a lot of people made that mistake with Lamar Jackson, as he brought up too, and the fact that he went out and he dropped 35 on the Rams just shows that this offense can really do it against any type of defense.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, like, with these young quarterbacks, like on the flip side of the ball, like the Rams and Jared Goff, I feel like Jared Goff is kind of like, he's not a great real life quarterback, but he's pretty fucking good for Dynasty and someone who's like relatively young and has his contract like locked up for a while. So he's another guy that I see dropping down Dynasty rankings that I think should be a lot higher than he's probably given credit for. On that side of the ball, I mean, he throws for over 320 yards against this Bills defense, 2 touchdowns. And I think the storyline here, other than, you know, Kupp and Woods both go for over 100 total yards from scrimmage and a touchdown, but Darrell Henderson, man. So Cam Akers is out, and Malcolm Brown is coming into the game like questionable with his finger surgery that he had. Should have been at relatively close to full strength, but Darrell Henderson takes over the workhorse role. He gets 20 carries, 114 yards on the ground, touchdown. Malcolm Brown goes 7 for 19, and Henderson out-targets him 3-2. So going forward, like, for people that own Cam Akers in both redraft and Dynasty, I know both of you guys were like very, very high on Akers and Dynasty. Does this, I know obviously this doesn't change the outlook of like what Akers is as a prospect, but what it does is it like puts a wrench in everything for his first year, which is really big for projecting him going forward. So Henderson's success for this week could mean Henderson just continues to be very, very involved going forward. And in redraft leagues too, like, are you looking to cap, or would you drop Cam Akers honestly on a redraft team? First of all, two, like, would you be looking to sell high on Darrell Henderson? Like, let's unpack the backfield here a little bit.
Yeah, I think it depends. For redraft, it depends on where you're at. Like, if you're 0-3 and you need to, like, make some moves and you need to drop Cam Akers, I can totally understand that. So he is
droppable in your mind?
Yeah, if you need the space. But if you're, like, kind of sitting pretty, I would not drop him because, like I said, I just like to hold high upside guys on my bench versus, like depth wide receiver pieces you can kind of grab off the waiver anytime. Mm-hmm. So I would hold in that instance. And then for Dynasty, it definitely does throw a wrench in things because, like, you know, the sad part is, like, Cam Akers was looking good that game before he got hurt. So now he's, like, injured and has a setback. And then, like, Darrell Henderson actually looks pretty damn good and explosive. He's still not getting enough volume in the passing game because I think Malcolm Brown's still soaking up a lot of that. But, like, if I can capitalize and kind of ship him off in Dynasty, I think I absolutely would. Like, I would probably sooner ship off Darrell Henderson than I would James Robinson. I'll put it that way.
I agree with that.
And for redraft, I think this is just a backfield I want to stay away from. Like, we can't forget that in week one, Malcolm Brown basically had the game that Darrell Henderson just had. And then Cam Akers didn't look good week one. Week two, he comes out the gate as a starter. Darrell Henderson's week was very lowly, and then Malcolm Brown gets hurt. Now Darrell Henderson's the only healthy one. He puts up 20 for like 112 and a touchdown. I just feel like when all three are healthy, if they're healthy at the same time, it's going to be one of those backfields kind of like the New York Giants this past week where you think you know who's going to be the guy, and then they all have like 8 carries for 34 yards and no touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, if you ended up picking up Henderson off the wire this week, you got to be kind of ecstatic because you've got to assume that he kind of took a hold of that backfield altogether. And they get the Giants next week. They're already 12-point favorites. And the Rams have been just running the ball at a crazy, crazy, crazy rate. I think they're number one in the NFL in terms of run rate. So you know what they want to do. But again, it is kind of like a spinning wheel back there in the backfield, and you don't know what you're going to actually get on a week-to-week basis in terms of touches. But they showed us pretty clearly what the fuck they want to do with Darrell Henderson. He looked very good doing it. So I think you can fire him up as probably a high-end RB2 next week. And depending on Cam Akers' health, like, I wouldn't be surprised if, since they're such favorites and since Henderson looks so good, they just let Akers rest as long as he needs to, because the injury seems like a pain tolerance thing, and like, if he takes another crack at the ribs, it's just going to be an elongated thing. So Henderson could probably ride into the sunset with him.
Yeah, he's going to put a wrench in Akers rise for sure. I mean, the other interesting thing from this game is Cooper Kupp, man, finally got involved, finally led the team in both receptions, yards, and he got a tutty on top. So he was actually killing it pretty nicely. I don't know what the shadow coverage was. Like, I'm not sure who Trey White was on, if he was on Robert Woods or Cooper Kupp, where he rotated.
Yeah, but I'm not sure what the end game was, but I know PFF had it projected where Woods was supposed to get shadowed by Tre'Davious White. So I think that was a little bit of hesitation, and that would, you know, funnel a little bit of the targets to Cooper Kupp. But like, regardless, they both kind of balled out.
Yeah, regardless, what Robert Woods showed you is you just cannot bench him, right? Because he's involved in the passing game. He had 3 tugs on the ground for 30 yards as well. He had a tutty. So Robert was just like an every week locked in starter. Like, everywhere I have him, I just don't even, he's like a set it and forget it type guy. You know, him, Ridley, those kind of guys in that value range is going to be just, you just got to start him every single week regardless of the matchup, because they're just too good to pass up on. Like you said, though, the Rams offense definitely like pretty underrated, right? Like, we didn't think this run game was going to have much run room. Like, this run blocking unit, not elite by any means, like the 2018 or 2017 years, but I guess another year of continuity, kind of similar to Chicago Bears, definitely helps him a little bit in that regard. And, you know, Henderson's got the burst, the juice.
I think we just got to give credit to Sean McVay, man, because he's just so – I know, like, people want to make fun of him because of the Super Bowl thing, but anytime a coach can really adapt, like, a completely new game plan, a completely new type of offense, like, we've seen it for 3 straight years now where he went from, like, this crazy run-heavy team with Gurley to a team that's much more pass-heavy last year, 12 personnel, to back to, like, a run game where he kind of fixed up the offensive line, man. I feel like he deserves a lot more credit as a coach.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the better offensive minds and pretty fluid. So you kind of want pieces of that offense. You know, we said Robert Woods going to be the guy, but it seems like Cooper Kupp's still the guy. Higbee wasn't that involved this week, but he was last week. So there's a lot of good fantasy pieces on that offense.
Yeah, you know what offense does not have a lot of good fantasy pieces? Fucking the Redskins, man, or the Washington football team. And we were talking on air before this, but like, it's Alex Smith time. It's time to see Alex Smith on the field. And for Terry McLaurin's sake, we need it to happen, because Terry has his normal game 4 for 83, but like what his normal game should be is 6 for 120 and a touchdown, because he just continuously gets overthrown. He had one just unforgivable fucking throw by Haskins into the end zone where it was like 10 yards out in front of him, should have scored a tug. And it's messy in the passing game. He's going to continue to lead in targets because he's so good, but like it's we're not seeing the upside that we need to from Terry McLaurin right now because of Haskins. And we have Logan Thomas, who is continuing to see a lot of targets at tight end, but he's not really turning them into anything. I think he had 8 last week. He led the team with 8 the week before, and he had 7 this week. So he's getting those targets, but he's not really producing them into anything. So I'd hold on to Logan Thomas if I had him, in case you need like a filler, because you don't see tight ends, you know, getting 7 to 8 targets a week pretty much. But other than that, I mean, not much going on the Washington side.
Yeah. Would you try to sell Terry McLaurin right now, knowing that the quarterback play probably isn't going to improve anytime soon for redraft leagues?
I feel like this is kind of his floor, though. That's I would keep him because, like, week 1, 5 for 70, like, and then this week, 4 for 83, and the week in between was a pop-off game. So I feel like his floor is really, really steady, and you're not going to be able to sell him until he gets another one of those pop-off games. So right now I'm going to hold on to him. I did just make a trade in Dynasty that I want to see what your guys' thoughts on. I think Mike, you probably saw because I posted it and you said something about it. So with the C-Mac and Barkley news, in one league, I acquired C-Mac. In one league, I shipped away Barkley. So what's weird is because I think like Saquon and C-Mac got hurt at the same time. People are looking at these injuries as like an even playing field. You know, they just kind of like, oh, both top RBs are both hurt, like time to ship them off. So like C-Mac is being bought at like a super discount, in my opinion. So I was able to move Joe Mixon, Terry McLaurin, and who's the other piece of the trade? No one good. I don't remember who the third piece was, but it was for C-Mac, Curtis Samuel, and a third round pick. And I flipped C-Mac or Curtis Samuel for Mike Davis. So I was able to get C-Mac. I was able to get his handcuff, which I played this week and helped me win. But like, I probably would have done that deal for C-Mac straight up for Mixon, Terry McLaurin, and I'll pull it. You guys talk about it, but I'll pull it up who the fuck I just.
Yeah, easily. I mean, I saw that trade go through and I was like, I don't understand why someone sold C-Mac for this little. Like Mixon is just not getting the usage. Like he can be as talented as we want, but it's not going to matter if Zach Taylor continues to be a fucking idiot with his play calling. Like it's actually like just brutal to watch because he's open a lot on the targets, but like, and one, Joe Burrow's looking downfield, which is actually good for his pass catchers, which we'll talk about later on.
The third piece of that trade was actually your boy Titty. Titty boy, TJ.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, he had a big game.
Game. So that doesn't look great at, but yeah. So,
oh, but still, even with Titty boy, got Higgins,
the number one goal line option on the Cincinnati Bengals. It wasn't mixed up being Higgins, but it was a good trade for me. I'm still feeling good about it.
Yeah, even with Titty Higgins, I think that's a good trade. And like CMC, I mean, the floor is just like so incredible, just given his volume. I think you're gonna have to be patient. Like, hopefully, you can weather the storm to actually last the six weeks to 8 weeks or whatever it is. But once he comes back, like if you're in the playoffs, like there's like no one else you'd rather kind of start, right? Like CMC, we always say CMC and Barkley in the same tier, but realistically speaking, like CMC is not in his own tier. Yeah. He's in his own tier. So I think that's a good trade. Like I would try and make that trade all day if I was in a competing team.
Yeah, I think you're right, Nick. People are just shipping off Saquon Barkley and Christian McCaffrey at like similar prices, even though Barkley's done for the year and Christian McCaffrey's going to be back in like a month or so. And the fact that you flipped him for a guy like Joe Mixon, who last year outside the second half of the year didn't look all too good because he wasn't getting a ton of usage. And then this year he's getting usage, but not in the way that we want. Like he's not getting any type of touchdowns on the goal line. He's not being used consistently in the passing game. He's a guy that I'm just slowly losing hope for because it doesn't seem like they want to use him in the right way. And even though he's like getting 17 touches on the ground, it hasn't been efficient either because the offensive line just isn't good. So I'm trying to ship off Joe Mixon if people are willing to buy him. And if you can get a Christian McCaffrey for him by just throwing in Titty Higgins and Terry McLaurin, I'm a big fan of that type of trade.
Yeah, I was excited for that one. So within that game, we were talking about we got the football team and we've got the Browns. Now, Nick Chubb with another big game. It was his second consecutive week going over 100 yards on the ground and multiple touchdowns. So I actually feel like Nick Chubb is low-key a sell-high candidate still. And we had talked about this a couple weeks ago, but I'm more so like pointing at redraft leagues. If you own Nick Chubb, the reason I say that is because he's had such big games and I think you can get a value that's similar to like a high-end RB1 off of him right now. And the problem with the Browns and the way their offense is running is like they're not going to see these type of game scripts week in and week out. They've played the Bengals, who didn't have Geno Atkins and Mike Daniels, and then they played the Washington, who also lost like Chase Young in this game, and they were able to dominate the game scripts. And I don't think that's going to be the case week in and week out. Obviously, their main game plan is to put the ball in their running back's hands. But like I think a lot more often than not, we'll probably see like 18 for 100 games from Nick Chubb, not be very involved in the passing game, and then score every other game, but not like what we saw here. So for two of my like very, very big like sell high candidates would be both of the Browns players in Nick Chubb and Odell Beckham Jr., preferably if you did that last week after Odell Beckham's big game.
Yeah, we kind of talked about it. I mean, remember you brought up like Mixon, Chubb versus right. Who was the third one? Eckler?
Eckler.
Yeah, so we said don't sell Eckler, obviously. And, you know, Mixon has like the contract. Granted, he still stinks, but he at least has a contract. But I think Chubb, you know, we talked about him having like that image. You know, you can still always sell on the image because he is, after all, the most talented runner in the NFL. And I think these back-to-back games is really going to like just prop up that narrative. It's not a narrative because it's true, but it's going to prop up that image even more and kind of give you that sell window. Because if you look at his targets, I mean, he's had one target per game for the first 2 weeks, and I'm not sure how many targets he had this week, but like you still see Kareem Hunt getting involved. He had another one reception this week. So he in negative game scripts, he is just, he'll still get the volume, right? But you're not going to get like multiple touchdown weeks every single week, especially like when he's breaking it from like 20 yards out. And you know, granted, he's very talented and seems like he can score easier from 20 yards out than he can from like on the goal line. But you just don't want to bet on that going forward. So
you know what? After looking at their schedule,
yeah, it's real soft. I looked at it.
It's not like they're going to be in that many bad game scripts. They play at Dallas next week, and it's the Colts, Steelers, Bengals, Raiders, Texans, Eagles, Jags. They get Titans, Ravens, and then the fantasy playoffs. They are against the Giants and the Jets.
Yeah, I guess maybe so, not, eh? Yeah, because they got the Dallas game is maybe tough, and the Steelers game. Yeah, it might be a rough one, but other than that, it's pretty wheels up.
It's pretty beautiful. So pretty much just like don't do anything I just said in terms of selling.
Yeah, exactly.
But like I would absolutely still try to sell Odell Beckham Jr., man. Like the big game he had, like, he's getting like five targets a game tops, and like they're not throwing the ball deep. Mayfield's throwing the ball 20 to 25 times a game. And I know the game script will be a little bit better, but I don't know. I just don't think Odell has it anymore. I don't think this offense really has it anymore.
Yeah, I think the game plan is just keep it out of Baker Mayfield's hands as much as you can, and good things are going to happen. And if that means Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt are both going to get 20 touches a game, that's what's going to happen. But on your point of selling him high, I feel like what you could do is just ship off a Nick Chubb for like a James Robinson plus a piece, because James Robinson isn't a household name yet. But what he's been
that's
doing
so,
on the field has
so
been
crazy.
Absolutely.
Week 3 in fantasy football, and we're talking about shipping off Nick Chubb or James Robinson. Crazy.
Well, plus a piece, maybe like a Keenan Allen on top.
Yeah. No, that's like exactly what I'm thinking right there. And it's hard to pull a trigger on something like that. Like you do have to have a little bit of risk tolerance there. But, I mean, you know, that's what you got to do if you're projecting forward. So let's move down to the Titans and the Vikings, where we had both of our top five running backs, you know, do their thing and cement why they're top five running backs. Everyone's worried about Henry. I don't know why the fuck you'd be worried about Henry, because he gets another 29 opportunities, 28 touches, 119 on the ground, finally gets to the end zone, gets his two tugs. Ryan Tannehill does not score through the air, unfortunately. Hopefully, we'll get A.J. Brown bike soon. But on the Vikings side of things, this is where shit gets interesting. So we have Kirk Cousins had a little bit of a bounce back, right? 250 yards, three tugs, two interceptions. So that obviously was not a positive thing there. But through the air, we had our Justin Jefferson breakout.
Oh, baby.
And as an Adam Thielen owner in, like, my most precious league, the E-Town Get Down, we're doing well. We're going to be 3-0 and in first. But, like, Thielen has quietly pulled – he's, like, going to be my wide receiver 3, I think, sooner rather than later. I tried to sell him after week 1 because I did not like how this Vikings offense looked. The problem is, like, when they're bad, they're really bad, and the players aren't going to do well. But when they're good, it's because Dalvin Cook did really well. And today we saw Justin Jefferson, like, they've been dying to get some kind of second weapon in the passing game, yep. And Justin Jefferson did it. 9 targets, 7 receptions, 175 yards. And a touchdown. And like, you know, I've talked about this before, but I talked to Brett Coleman like semi often in the DMs. And one of the first things he sent me was like, Justin Jefferson is going to be the Vikings wide receiver 1 by Thanksgiving. And I was like, yo, just fuck off. I just drafted Adam Thielen. Like, no way you're right about that. And after today's game, I'm like, shit, like, would I rather own Justin Jefferson going forward? No, but, like, obviously it's a little bit of hyperbole, but what's your worry level on Adam Thielen?
I'm still not worried. I mean, he's still got the looks. He's still getting the red zone work. Like, Justin Jefferson had a blow-up game for sure, and that's why I don't remember if you did, but a couple of us, I think Noah did too. We had Justin Jefferson ranked as our wide receiver 3 behind Jalen Reagor and CeeDee Lamb for dynasty purposes because he is pretty talented. But I think having – like, I'm of the philosophy of this, right? When you have more good players on your team, it's good for everyone. So yeah. The fact that it's just Adam Thielen and their offense stinks, it's just Adam Thielen and Cook, that's not good. Now teams actually have to pay attention to Justin Jefferson, and we know Adam Thielen is still a good receiver. So I think we're going to get more of like not Diggs because, you know, Justin Jefferson isn't Diggs yet, but like more of like that type of offense where Kirk actually has some more options to go to, and it'll be good for their offense and moving the chains. Because I don't think Justin Jefferson will lead in targets every single week. I think he is definitely their wide receiver of the future, but I still think Adam Thielen's probably the best wide receiver on the team.
Yeah, what concerns me about Thielen, though, is like these past 3 games were the perfect game script for him to be heavily involved. Like week 1, they gave up 43 to the Packers. Week 2, they lost by 17. This week was a shootout, and he just wasn't – like he put up touchdowns, he put up decent numbers week 1. But if you're not putting up like 50, 60 yards at least, like I don't have much confidence in you. But then on the flip side, you look at their upcoming schedule, and it's one of the softest pass defense schedules I've ever seen. It's the Texans, the Seahawks, the Falcons, the Packers, and then the Lions again. So if you want to sell him now, that's probably going to hurt you in the long run because he gets like 5 or 6 really easy matchups in a row. But as far as Justin Jefferson goes, I think a lot of people were worried that he'd be only a slot receiver in the NFL because that's what he played his last year at LSU. But he was on the outside a whole bunch, and he had a lot of really good catch and run, like running after the catch plays where he scored his touchdown. I think it was like a 40, 50-yard touchdown where he broke 2 cornerbacks' ankles and he took it to the house. So he is definitely a dynamic playmaker. He put that 4.4 speed to the test. I know when like a few months back we were watching the combine and just the group chat was blown up. It's like Justin Jefferson ran a 4.4. I thought this guy was gonna be like a 4.7, 4.8 at best, like T. Higgins type of numbers. But he put those numbers to the test. He looked like a very skinny version of AJ Brown out there. And I agree with you guys. He does look like the wide receiver of the future in the Minnesota Vikings passing attack because he just seems very versatile and he's not just a cookie cutter slot receiver like a lot of people thought he'd be.
Yeah, but it was just like Thielen. The allure for Thielen for me was the fact that we were going to just see so much volume, like the target share was going to be massive for him. And it was for, you know, it was 8 targets the first week, 8 targets the second week. And then it dwindled down to like 5 this week. And the reason I even put him as a sell high is because he scored the touchdown. And the touchdown he had, like, had he not caught that, he would have put up like 3 points in this week. And it was like an incredible, incredible fucking catch by him. So I don't want to take that away. And that's like part of his game and what will keep him being a good fantasy wide receiver. But like, if I don't know, if you can still get him for wide receiver 1 kind of price tag and sell him at that, like I'm a little bit worried just for the fact that if Jefferson emerges and starts to see even like 6 targets a game, that's going to come out of Thielen's target share. And if he's not getting the volume, then I don't know how efficient Kirk is going to be, you know, to make Thielen that wide receiver 1.
Yeah, I think yeah, maybe
looking back to last year, what Adam Thielen did, he's having a very similar start. Like just going weeks 1 through 7 before his injury, 43 in a touchdown, 75 yards, 55 in a touchdown, 6 yards, then 130 in 2 touchdowns, 57 in a touchdown, 25 in a touchdown. It was like really low volume, low output, but the touchdown saved him. And I'm kind of concerned that's what we're going to see out of him going forward.
Yeah, I think it's just probably relative market share percentage might go down, but I think also the total target volume goes up. Like this defense stinks, man. Like, I mean, they ran into a Titans who like love to run the ball and play a slow game, but if they start playing against like faster paced offenses, like they're going to have to throw to keep up. Like the Falcons, the Seattle Seahawks, like those are going to be like shootout games, and Kirk Cousins can absolutely shoot it out. And I think it's going to be good for him to have like both pass catching weapons. Like I said, I think it's good to have a better offense with more weapons on it. So I'm actually still in on this offense, and I'm actually still in on Adam Thielen because I just know he's a really good player. And the fact that he's basically dominating all the red zone looks is actually pretty promising. We just got to hope that obviously Dalvin Cook kind of stays healthy for the offense. Otherwise, it's going to be pretty brutal.
Yeah, I'm going to hold on to him in the one league that I do own him in just because the team is doing well. You know, if it ain't broke, do not fix it. But the Raiders broke up a little bit today. not a good performance by them. They lose to the Patriots 36-20. Cam gets absolutely I'm going down my fucking team in one of my dynasty leagues, and I'm like, holy shit, who did I leave on the bench with 32 fantasy points today? lo and behold, it's fucking Rex Burkhead throwing up a 32 stack. So the running backs in New England like might be the story here, but I don't even want to make them a story because then next week they're not going to be a thing. Basically, Cam just didn't get the goal line work, right? And I think last week we got in our head that like Cam was going to be a 350-yard passer on the normal, and that's just not going to be a thing, right? This is we're going to get, you know, 200 passing yards from Cam, probably a touchdown, and hope that he gets one in on the ground. This week just happened to go to Rex Burkhead when they were inside the 5-yard line rather than Cam. So disappointing day for Cam. But Sonny Michel busts off a 48-yard run. I didn't even know he was fucking capable of doing that. So like
nine carries for 117 yards. I did not know Sonny Michel was capable of doing that.
Yeah, and J.J. Taylor leads the backfield in carries, 11 for 43. So realistically, like, nothing positive to take away here in terms of like what you want to do going forward. I'm not going to pick up Rex Burkhead hoping that he is an integral part of the offense. Ben Michel has just looked washed in every aspect of it. And this was like the first usable game he had. And really all he did was give you about 11 standard fantasy points. So, you know, that's probably his ceiling on a week to week basis. On the flip side of things, Henry Ruggs did not play in this one, which made Hunter Renfrow, the GOAT, kind of come out in full force. 6 for 84 and a tug. Josh Jacobs catches another 3 balls. Nothing exciting out of his thing. I think the only storyline here really is Darren Waller kind of disappeared. After his huge breakout game in week two, he catches just 2 of his 4 targets for 9 yards. Is this a worry for you with Waller? It's not a worry for me necessarily. I just feel like this is the games that you're going to have when you have fucking fantasy tight ends because they all kind of stink, to be honest with you. But I'll keep Waller in there as a top 5 guy just with because the ceiling he has.
Yeah, I'm not as worried because, I mean, all Bill does every time is, like, if you're a team that have a consolidated offense, and what I mean by that is, like, you have one or two guys that is your entire offense, which is the exact case with the Raiders between Jacobs and Waller, and we all know running backs don't fucking matter. So they basically came out and said, like, yo, we're going to eliminate Waller from the game, and that's exactly what they do. So, like, whenever you're going up against Patriots defenses, you are scared to start the best player unless like you have a diversified offense because all they do is just remove that one guy out of the game and force you to beat them some way else. And that's exactly what they did. They just bracketed him and, you know, like most tight ends can't beat bracket coverage. And I mean, even if you bracket like Travis Kelce, it's going to be the same result. So I'm not too worried because they don't have to play the Patriots every single week. And I think he's still the best receiver on that team. So going forward, just going to keep starting him the way I do.
Man, looking at this box score, Zay Jones and Nelson Agholor are on this team. Like, what the fuck is going on in Las Vegas? How are these guys rostered anywhere?
Bro, Gruden just loves his fucking vets. That's why Jason Witten is there. Like, he just loves dudes that have been around the block, even if they're completely fucking a negative for their teams. Yeah, I mean, with Waller, like you said, I mean, no one takes away the opposing team's like best weapons better than, you know, Uncle Bill out there. So I guess it wasn't really a surprising outcome. And one surprising outcome to me, I thought the Giants +4 was a sharp pick. Turned out that was not.
Oh my God, dude. I thought so too. I thought playing Giants defense was a sharp pick. Turns out.
Oh,
not
hell
at
no.
All.
No. So
turns out not at all.
Fucking throws up a 345 burger and a touchdown. Daniel Jones just turns the ball over as much as he did in his rookie year. I think maybe the biggest storyline here is, I guess we can look at both backfields because the Giants bring in Devonta Freeman. He goes 5 for 10 on the ground, which is not a surprise. We have Wayne Gallman.
Honestly, that's better than I thought he would do.
Bro, listen to the rest of this. Listen to this. Devonta Freeman, 5 for 10. Wayne Gallman, 4 for 7. Deion Lewis, 1 for fucking 0.
Like Jeff Wilson, 12 for 15. It was like Matt Asiata across the board in that game.
Bro, like nobody ran the ball well in this game. Fucking Brandon Ayuk is the RB1, apparently. 3 for 31 on the ground. So Jerick McKinnon leads the backfield with 14 carries, 38 yards, and a touchdown. Jeff Wilson, 12 for 15 and a touchdown. Jeff Wilson also gets in through the air. Very involved in the passing game. McKinnon also does well through the passing game. But, like, I think going forward, like, obviously McKinnon is the guy that you want to own because he's got the upside, he's got the explosiveness, but are you doing anything with Raheem Mostert? Because he's going to be back relatively soon, and I think that, like, for me, he seems like a good buy-low candidate because he just low-key might be the best playmaker in all the NFL.
Mike and I both like Jerick McKinnon a lot, but it's no question who the best running back on this team is when they're all healthy. It's Raheem Mostert. Like, he had a few, like, 80-yard runs called back the week prior. And Jerick McKinnon, for as much as we love him and as much of an athletic freak.
A few 80-yard runs called back. Like, just fucking light work for most of them.
He's like a 29-year-old running back with less career carries than Phillip Rivers, and he's just got a lot of juice left in the tank. But Jerick McKinnon, I don't know. I just feel like he's never been a good running back, and then he gets put in a situation where he.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
He's the starter, and we're like, okay, it's time for him to pop off, and he goes 14 for 38, like 2.7 to carry. That's just like the classic Jerick McKinnon show. He
does better. Backup,
but I agree with you, Nick. Like, this offense with Nick Mullins is able to hang 30 sticks, albeit on the New York Giants. But once Raheem Mostert is in the fold, they bring George Kittle back. They have Deebo Samuel there. Like, they have actual weapons to take away from defenses focusing solely on the running game. Raheem Mostert, if it's not a serious knee injury, which it doesn't look like it's going to be, seems like a good buy low candidate because he's being used in the receiving game and he's just ripping off 70-yard runs like it's his job.
Yeah, or you can be like me and an idiot, just sell him off for Cortland Sutton right before he goes on the fucking IR. But I think, I think Jerry McKinnon's got a role. Look, he's never been a good running back. I've said that for a long time. But you know what's appealing is his receiving role, and he does seem to have some of that, even though they're kind of still spreading it out. But what you get with him is kind of like a like an RB2 type play. He's getting some work in the red zone. He's getting some receiving work. Look, if Raheem Mostert comes back, we all know he's the lead. In the meantime, it was kind of encouraging to see him lead the team on groundwork. It was kind of surprising to see Brandon Ayuk kind of come out and just smash it. So that was nice to see for sure, because he's getting involved. He's basically took that Deebo role, right? He's like kind of getting involved in the short intermediate passing game, and then he's getting a couple carries here and there to kind of like light it up on the ground. So that was kind of exciting, but I'm going to temper expectations on this whole offense, because like the same shit happened last year. Nick Mullins came out and we all fucking crowned him the GOAT, and then he turned into exactly what he is, just a backup quarterback. And we've got to remember that this is against the Giants still. So I think we got to temper expectations a little bit on this offense as a whole.
Funny how that happens in the NFL. Like, backup quarterbacks come in at halftime, or they come in for one game and they just look fucking incredible. And then immediately the next week, they're just shit. Like Nick Mullins, like
Jeff Driscoll this past week, he got benched for fucking Brett Rippin.
Driscoll. Yeah. Like, dude, it just happens over and over again. It's probably about to happen to Nick Foles, whoever they play next week. But like, he looked like an absolute god.
And now, I thought you were going to say Justin Herbert right there. I'm so happy you said Nick Foles.
I wouldn't do that to you. We'll wait till we get to the Chargers game. But for a more embarrassing game, you know, like if the Falcons game didn't happen, this would be the laughing stock of the week probably. And it is the Bengals versus the Eagles. It ends up in a fucking tie, 23-23. I don't know what's like the worst part of this entire game. Was it like the play calling? Was it Carson Wentz? I mean, the offensive line loses Jason Peters now. So they were already, I'm pretty sure they were running out an entire second string line. And now they're starting to dip into the third string and dudes that work at Home Depot and shit. But like, this is a big problem for Philly. And like, Carson Wentz just looks so bad.
He looks bad. Their O-line was awful. I mean, we got to remember, this is a beat-up Bengals D-line without Geno Atkins, without their best players, and they were just in his face pretty much all day long. And then because they were in his face, he was throwing up some pretty ill-advised throws. He was missing Sanders on easy fucking checkdowns, just like inexcusable misses. Like this offense, like, I mean, I bought into Miles Sanders because I thought this was going to be a good offense. They scored a lot. They had a great O-line. His opportunity share was all good. And right now, I mean, he's basically a bell cow on a good team. He's basically a poor man's version of James Robinson. That's what Miles Sanders is right now.
Chill.
So
now, on the Eagles side of the ball, though, there were two injuries. So we had Dallas Goedert, who left very early with an ankle injury. He did not return. So you have to kind of keep an eye on how serious that is. And then you had DeSean Jackson, who basically dudded out for the game after.
DeSean Jackson got hurt.
DeSean Jackson did get hurt. That is
breaking news every year. We
breaking news. Take a fucking drink. Yeah, hamstring. So like, I don't even know what analysis we can give on that. But like, the reason we like the Eagles, like, oh, offensive line is going to be good. Lots of weapons. Yep. Like, this shit is going to look good. And then they're automatically reverted back to second half of 2019 season again, which was Miles Sanders and Zach Ertz. Yeah.
And Greg Ward, wide receiver one.
Exactly.
He's the best quarterback and receiver on this team.
So, like, Greg Ward is absolutely a pickup. He actually led the team in targets with 11, caught 8 for 72 and a touchdown. Zach Ertz went back to his 10 targets, 7 for 70. And that's the kind of games we're going to see when Goddard isn't – and, like, this is even better for Ertz because at the end of last year, Goddard was still out there and producing, but now Goddard's not there. So, Ertz seems like, you know, for those of you that drafted him in the 5th, 6th round, you kind of caught a lucky break, but it's going to be nice for you going forward. Miles Sanders had fucking 26 opportunities in this one after having 27 the week before. Goes for like an unimpressive 107 total yards, but 8 targets, man. And Wentz missed them, just fucking absolutely overthrew him on a 50-yard. Yeah, dude, it's even the ones that are like 3 yards in front of him. Yeah. He just overthrows them. I'm like, the fuck are you doing? And overthrows him on a 50-yard walk-in touchdown that he would have had down the field, which would have made Sanders look like an elite RB1 at this point and not a fucking poor man's James Robinson. So watch your mouth over there. So I'm feeling good if I have Miles Sanders because the opportunity is so fucking high, but like, I don't know what to make of this Eagles team, man.
Yeah, honestly, Mike, are you going out and trying to buy Jalen Hurts right now? Because this does not look like the answer.
No, because I already have Jalen Hurts everywhere.
So. I knew that was gonna be the answer. I should even ask that question.
But on the Bengals side, look, Joe Burrow looks like the real fucking deal. And he's balling out. And look, the Eagles don't have any world beaters on the defensive side, but they do have Darius Slay, man. It's a tough matchup there for AJ Green. So AJ Green basically got erased, but in his wake, our boy Tyler Boyd. I mean, I had the split screen from Sunday Ticket, and every time I looked over to the Bengals games, it was literally Tyler Boyd catching a pass, and every single time it was like Tyler Boyd first down. So it's beautiful to see him get involved, but more importantly, it's beautiful to see my boy Titty Higgins, who both of you disrespected nonstop all offseason, to just go off for 5 catches, 40 yards, 2 tutties. It's clear that he is the wide receiver 3 in this offense. It's clear that he is the future once AJ Green gets fucking pushed to the wayside. It's going to be a beautiful pairing between Burrow, Boyd, and Higgins. Rest in peace, Joe Mixon. I don't know what the fuck to do with you, but the pass catch is going to be beautiful. And I'm going to remember this day because it's the day that everyone got to see what Titty Higgins was all about, and you guys can just fucking suck a cock.
Gosh, Mike, how are you going to call him the wide receiver 3 when Gio Bernard put up 3 for 55? Like, you can't be doing that.
All right, let me ask you. Actually, we didn't talk about in the last game, Deebo Samuel is going to be activated off of IR. I don't know if he's going to play in week 4 right away.
He's likely to play.
Yeah, they're likely to play week 5. So, like, who for a season-long pickup between Ayuk, because Deebo Samuel is not going to be on anyone's waivers. He was in everyone's IR spots. But between Ayuk, T. Higgins, and Greg Ward, for season long, right? These are obviously guys that you don't want to throw them into your lineup, but they're guys that, you know, at this point in the season, like, you're going to have to look for flex roles. And I'm going to be honest, like, with Deebo coming back, I'm not too interested in Ayuk. And the Bengals offense on a week-to-week basis, I don't know what we're going to expect. Like, you brought up Slay, and he's, you know, he's not Slay what he was once, but he was on AJ Green all game, and he kind of took the pressure off the other receivers. I don't know what we're going to get from Higgins on a week-to-week basis, but, like, Greg Ward legit operates as a wide receiver 1 when fucking DeSean Jackson's hurt and Jalen Reagor is going to be out for the foreseeable future. So, like, I kind of like Greg Ward the most out of those 3.
Yeah, that's where I'd go too. The thing about Brandon Ayuk is he plays basically the same exact role as Deebo Samuel would, except Deebo Samuel's pretty good at football, where Brandon Ayuk probably shouldn't have been a first-round pick. Titty Higgins, guy stinks. And then Greg Ward, like, Dallas Goddard's
hurt. People are not going to like those comments. You're going to have
I can't wait.
Strong.
I
mean,
I'm wearing a fucking headband and a man bun, so I get all the comments I need anyways. But then on the other side of the ball, the Philadelphia Eagles, they lost Goddard. They lost DeSean Jackson. Jalen Reagor, my wide receiver 1 for Dynasty, rookie drafts this past year. He's gone. Rest in peace, him. So, yeah, it's got to be Greg Ward because it's going to be a decently high-volume passing offense. And he's the only one on the team with hands other than Zach Ertz and Miles Sanders. But to be honest, like, Miles Sanders doesn't have hands because Carson Wentz can't throw to those hands. So I definitely pick up Greg Ward of those 3.
Yeah, I think you know, the other thing to remember is Kittle was also out this week. So if he comes back and Deebo comes back and you're a low passing volume offense, it's going to be kind of tough to play that role. And like you said, like, Ayuk and Deebo kind of play the similar roles. I don't know if I'm like rushing to get Greg Ward either.
No, but if I don't, I mean, none of them are like exciting to get off the
waiver wire, but yeah. But if you need a wide receiver three kind of plug in for that flex, you know, he could kind of be that guy. But like, just understand that, you know, there's some weeks he'll give you like 6 points, and then on a boom week he'll give you like 14. So nothing too exciting there for me. But yeah, he's definitely someone where it's a great story, man. It's a great story. Like, these guys, I love when these guys just like come out of nowhere. Like, this guy, nobody knew about him last year, came on the scene, actually used them in my dynasty leagues. My wide receivers were fucking bare, and he kind of helped me, you know, throughout the weeks. But yeah, I wouldn't get too excited about any of them on a week-to-week basis, because it's going to be tough to see that volume.
All right, let's try to move through these quickly, because the game-by-games take a long fucking time. We're almost at a fucking hour already. I didn't realize. All right, Texans versus Steelers. Steelers win 28-21. I'm going to run through the Texans side really quickly. As we already knew, the Steelers' run defense was really good, combined with David Johnson being really bad on the ground, 13 for 23 on the ground. I think the only real story takeaway here is that Will Fuller left last week's game with a hamstring injury. I didn't play him anywhere in my lineups because I just did not trust him going out there unless 100%. But he sees 5 targets, 4 for 54, and a tug. So next week, I will be comfortable rolling him back out into my lineups. On the flip side of things, Anthony McFarland starts off his Hall of Fame career averaging 7.0 yards per carry, leads the NFL. So that was good to see. Now, it was good to fucking see him finally on the field after being a healthy scratch for a couple weeks. But it does look like James Conner is absolutely the workhorse here. 18 carries, 109 yards, and a tug. Also 5 targets, 4 for 40 through the air. So yeah. James Conner, you know, the roller coaster season for him, where some people liked him in the offseason. He was very polarizing going into the year, gets hurt immediately, then comes back and takes his workhorse role. If you own James Conner, you're just going to ride this out, right? And just hope he continues to put up RB1 numbers.
Yeah, I mean, unless you can like try and flip another workhorse running back, which like most people aren't going to be willing to do because of the injury history. You just got to, with guys like these, you just got to hope that he lasts, man. You got to hope he lasts long enough to kind of carry you through what you need to be carried through, because the work volume is good. But I mean, the other thing you got to point out here is like, Houston Texans is a run funnel defense. I mean, yeah, Everyone is going up against them is averaging like 6 yards per carry, looking like fucking Hall of Fame players. So if you got a good running back going up against them, just plug him in.
Deontay Johnson left the game with concussion, and he did not return. So keep an eye on that. I mean, most guys end up being able to return from the concussion protocol for the next week's game, but it is something to monitor. And James Washington would probably be the next guy up. We saw Eric Ebron get pretty involved in the passing game too. So could be on the tight end streaming radar. Anything to add there, Mr. FB God?
Yeah, I'd say in this game, David Johnson, for me, I can't believe I'm about to say it, but he looks like a good buy low candidate, because these past 2 weeks he hasn't been great, but he's the workhorse there. He played Baltimore, yes, and Pittsburgh, which are two tough defenses. You look at his upcoming slates: Minnesota, Jacksonville, Tennessee, Green Bay, Jacksonville, Cleveland, all in a row. The receiving game work isn't as consistent as we'd hope for a guy that has this type of skill set, but just seeing as how he's getting all the looks, and he had two bad games against two really good defenses, and he gets like 5 or 6 easy ones in a row. Not that I'm saying I'm going to trade a Nick Chubb for him or anything like that, but he's somebody that people were very low on heading into the year because we haven't seen him be good in a long time.
Who was?
David
who was,
Johnson.
Who was low on David Johnson going
in? Not us, yeah, not me.
It's a really good point. I was going to actually bring that up. I forgot to. If he didn't score a touchdown, he would be like the premier fucking buy low candidate, because he did get in. So people, you know, he's gotten like 99% of the running back touches since Duke Johnson went out with his ankle injury in week 1. It's like the matchups of the Steelers Ravens is just so fucking tough. Like, you couldn't have expected him to do well in those.
Yeah, and in week 1, when he was running against the Chiefs, he actually looked good, and my mentions blew up, and then that victory lap lasted 1 of 12 quarters that's been going on for that team. So I think it's a good buy low candidate. So if he does do well, I'm on the right side of history. If he does do poorly, he's over 230 pounds. You can't hold me liable.
You're on the right side of history either way. Let's talk about the Jets being on the fucking wrong side of history. There is one. There's actually, you know what? James Conner or James Robinson going forward season long.
Ooh, fuck. That's tough.
I'd say James Conner, just because we know, I guess we know it with James Robinson too, but we don't know the injury history of James Robinson. I don't know. I'm just going to go with Conner, just because I can't make an argument, because James Robinson is also getting the workhorse type of workload.
It's like you want to say, oh, I just love the game too much. My bias is blinding me. Yeah, it's like game script's not going to be there, but then it's like, okay, but he also catches passes and shit. So
Game script hasn't been there for 3 weeks.
I'd say I'm leaning Conner a little bit in redraft, just because like I said, you kind of just got to bank on these guys to stay healthy. And Conner does have a workhorse role. You know, we kind of joke about James Robinson being a bell cow. He's kind of not there yet. That the snap split was actually pretty even, like 50-50, especially when they're getting blown out. There's a lot of Chris Thompson out there, so some Dare Ogunbowale as well. Whereas like Conner, you know, he's also on a better team, a better offense with a good defense, so probably lends to better run scripts. So I'm like barely edging out Conner by a little bit there.
Yeah, I'm going to go the same way. It fucking hurts to say it, though. It's not something I feel good about. There's literally nobody on the Jets that you can roster at this point. They're fucking trotting out of high school.
Braxton Berrios.
Caleb Bellage's hurdle. He just got fucking smacked in the mouth. Yeah.
Bro, like, they're drawing up, like, screenplays for Caleb Bellage on 3rd and 36.
I saw him, like, wow, Bilal Powell got big in the offseason.
I fucking picked up the Indy Colts defense like 2 weeks ago in E-Town Get Down for this fucking matchup, and they put up like 27 points for me. They started the game off with a pick six, got another pick six, a safety. It was a fucking beautiful sight. On the Colts side of the ball, Michael Pittman got hurt. I'm not sure if he came back in, but Paris Campbell is obviously hurt, and Jack Doyle was supposed to be like all systems go, but he didn't see a target or anything. I don't even know if he was on the fucking field. Because Mo Alley Cox was sludging his fucking junk.
Slow
everywhere.
Mo, baby. Slow Mo.
Slow Mo Tugs score the same amount of fantasy points as fucking fast forward Tugs do. And he got in the end zone again, man. 3 targets, 3 catches, 50 yards. He seems like a legit waiver wire pickup for the tight end spot, because I don't know what the fuck Jack Doyle is doing, but we didn't get the bounce back game for T.Y. Hill. The passing game is just not there for Indy.
So bad.
Would have thought with Phil Rivers at the helm.
So bad.
Passing game. And yeah, Naheem Hines is basically Austin Eckler, though. 7 carries for 21 yards. 4 for 40.
Love that. Yeah, so not much to talk about here. I mean, JT didn't have the upside game that we had kind of wanted, but the Jets are low-key like a pretty good run defense, so you can't just shove it up the middle against them. His high-end RB1 games will continue to come. Talking about high-end RB1 games, Austin Eckler, man. Shout-out to all the people that sold him after week 1. Shout-out to Justin Herbert.
Salute you, idiots.
Shout-out to Justin Herbert for throwing the ball 30 times to Keenan Allen and Austin Eckler. This is what I expected the Chargers to be from the start. This is why we liked Eckler, because we figured that they would be down early and they would be down often, and this led to 11 targets for Austin Eckler, which is a beautiful thing to see. Justin Herbert, like, got hurt for about 0.5 seconds.
Yeah, we were scared.
And I thought he broke his arm or, like, broke his collarbone or something, and then he comes back in on
too strong.
On the net, he's way too strong for it. Yeah, and Anthony Lynn couldn't wait to get him off the field, to be honest. He was probably so happy. He's like, yes, I get to put fucking Tyrod. But he has his rookie woes, man. He had some plays where, this is probably more like what he is, where he's going to have a really strong arm. He can hit you deep. He can hit you all over the field. And then he has some really fucking boneheaded plays where you're like, bro.
Should have had another pick. The guy dropped it.
Yeah. So Justin Herbert is, I mean, he's streamable in super flex leagues, I guess, but gives me a lot of hope as an Austin Eckler owner. I really liked what I saw there. I think Mike Williams also might have got hurt, but I think he might have came back in as well. But it's arrows up for Eckler, arrows up for Keenan Allen. On the flip side of things, man, like, there's a very real debate here. I don't even know if it's a debate right now for redraft for season long. Like, I think I'd straight up take Robbie Anderson over DJ Moore going forward.
He's looked so good. Dude, he was always a guy I loved on the Jets. I've owned him almost every year in my home league, and he always fucking burns me because he puts up like 7 for 125, 6 for 150, and then it's like 2 for 18. But you're part of the Jets offense. You have Adam Gase calling the shots. That's going to happen. I actually have him as a buy low. I know it's going to be tough because the first 2 weeks, he's basically like the third best receiver in the NFL. He put up a dud game, but you're being shadowed by Casey Hayward in a very good pass rush where you're not going to be able to get the ball out deep to him. But you look at the type of matchups he has going forward: Arizona, Atlanta, Chicago, New Orleans, Atlanta, Kansas City, Tampa Bay, Detroit, Minnesota. He doesn't have a buy until week 13. He's a legit wide receiver too, or a flex option for you for the next like almost 10 weeks, 2.5 months. And he's looked very good. He's been the target leader on this team thus far, and Teddy Bridgewater and him have a connection. And I also didn't know that he was coached by Matt Rhule back in Temple, so maybe
like, that was the whole thing. Him Teddy, and Robbie, they have all of history. It's actually incredible, right? Like, I had a deal, I don't know if you saw it, but in What to Do Dynasty with Snacks, where I gave up Daniel Jones and like Robbie Anderson for like Marquise.
You got $45 tab.
For Marquise Brown in a first and a second from Snacks. And, you know, at that point, I was like, look, I'm going to give you Robbie Anderson. I know he's not worth that much, but he's like a nice flex play, a nice wide receiver for you if needed. And who the fuck would have known that he's like a top – he's a wide receiver one right now overall in the season. So, look, just goes to show, man, we don't fucking know shit. And Robbie Anderson, Spaghetti Anderson, is going to be out there. He's going to be a real deal. And the fact that you saw him produce, like, the fact that you see him getting used on, like, slants and short intermediate routes, getting those, like, low –
that's what I mean. He's getting all the targets that we figured, like, DJ Moore would be getting. And he's not getting – I think maybe the lesson to learn here is, like, there was so many moving pieces going into Carolina this offseason that we probably shouldn't have projected DJ Moore at his ceiling. You know what I mean? Like, I think everyone was drafting him top 10, just projecting what we saw last year when it was the quarterback change, the coaching change, bringing Robbie Anderson in. So there was a lot to go around there. And I feel bad for the DJ Moore owners. I don't own him anywhere in redraft, thankfully, but I do have him in Dynasty, and I'm just going to kind of hold on hope there and hope, you know, the offenses with a new coordinator, with a new head coach, tend to get stronger as the years go on. And, I mean, Teddy Bridgewater hasn't been fantastic, to say the least. So also good to see Mike Davis kind of do his thing while Christian McCaffrey was out. So if anyone picked up Mike Davis as, you know, the handcuff.
Down King.
Fucking 8 receptions again, 45 yards and a touchdown. Yeah, so Mike Davis, like, you don't even need C-Mac when Mike Davis out here fucking balling. Yeah,
C-Mac is pass the torch to him as a new Austin Eckler.
And C-Mac is the poor man's Mike Davis. So we got Mike Davis going out there now, balling out.
You know who's the poor man? Ronald Jones. Leonard Fournette.
Dude, the funniest shit I saw on Twitter was, like, you know, there's, like, certain Ronald Jones shoots, like Nick Will and, like, I think he had, like, Ronald Jones, like, RB1 above, like, Saquon, whatever it was. But, like, he tweeted out, like, oh, like, Ronald Jones, like, this is his stat line. He tweeted out, like, Leonard Fournette, this is his stat line. And, you know, I was told that Leonard Fournette's a starter. And then someone else right after him, like, tweeted out, like, when both running backs in Tampa Bay have a bad game, and they put out the, like, fucking Thanos when he, like, gets the – when he gets the gauntlet, like, power.
Yeah, I saw you tweet that, and I was like, I fucking –
so I was like, dude, so funny. And, like, someone else said, like, dude, only Ronald Jones truthers, like, celebrate when both backs have a fucking shit game.
That's true. Yeah, so, I mean, Ronald Jones, like, this is going to be the problem with the Bucs backfield. And, like, this was the game script for one of them to pull away in, and it just didn't happen. And I listened to a few podcasts over the previous week, and people that are, like, close in with the Bucs and listening to beat reporters, and they're just like, this is going to continue to be a Peyton Barber, Ronald Jones situation throughout the year. And one of them might have a good game, one of them might not have a good game, and, like, vice versa. It's Fournette's obviously the shiny toy there because he has the upside of breaking that long run, but it's going to be really hard to trust either of them going forward. In redraft leagues, Ronald Jones goes 13 for 53, Leonard Fournette 7 for 15, and Ronald Jones tops him in targets 4-2. I think there are a couple other takeaways here, though. Chris Godwin limps off with a hamstring injury after going 5 for 64 and a touchdown, so he was back, and then he leaves, and now this seems like something that might be a little bit more serious. It was a non-contact injury, which is weird on a hamstring. Like, he was just, like, kind of out of the play and, you know, wasn't running at full speed or whatever, but obviously honestly, like, this offense is so weird. Mike Evans, his stat line today.
Oh, my God. He's Jordan Howard.
Who the fuck? Mike Evans is Matt Asiata. Weeks 1 and 3 combined. 3 catches, 4 yards, 3 touchdowns.
Bro, his stat, he's got to be the first, and shout out to Bats for this, got to be the first person ever in the NFL to just have a stat line of 2-2-2. I was like, he's just Jerome Bettis through the fucking air. And, like, you know, we were excited about Scotty Miller last week, and now maybe it's time to get excited about Scotty Miller again because he leads the team in receiving yards of 83. I think he's a good playmaker, man. And he left a couple yards on the field, like, making amazing catches, but his foot was, like, out of bounds. I think he's legit, and I think he could be someone that could, despite what he did last week and put up a dud for most people, man, don't fucking play Scotty Miller emotionally, all right? Use your head. He's a good player, and now he's going to fill in for Chris Godwin. So I like Scotty Miller as a pickup this week. The backfield is discouraging. The entire fucking Broncos offense is wildly discouraging because Jeff Driscoll comes in and takes a shit on himself and gets benched in the fourth quarter. Brett Rypien comes in and, like, rips off. He went 8 for 9, but he threw a bad interception up the middle. The backfield was disgusting. 8 for 26 for Melvin Gordon. No one did well in the receiving game, but Jerry Jeudy did see 9 targets. Noah Fant saw 10 targets. A lot of people were getting high on KJ Hamler, and for good reason. He's a good player, but he only sees 5 targets, 3 for 30. Anyone in the Denver offense are going to be excited about while Drew Lock and Cortland Sutton are out.
I have Melvin Gordon as a buy low just because he had a terrible game, and I know Philip Lindsay looks to be back next week, but they play Thursday, and they're playing the Jets, so I don't see any reason to trot him out. And the Jets, although they kind of did shut down Jonathan Taylor a little bit, they didn't really need to use Jonathan Taylor all that much this past week. So he gets the Jets, which is pretty easy, Miami, which is easy, Kansas City, which you can run on them, Atlanta, the Las Vegas Raiders, and then the Chargers in 6 of the next 7.
You skipped the Pats in there. I see what you did.
Yeah, I said 6 of the next 7, you know. Okay. I was going to leave that one out.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not that excited about this offense as a whole. Like, honestly, even with Drew Lock, they're – I don't know what happened to their O-line, but their
O-line
– Who's
the worst quarterback on this team? That's the real question, I think. Is it Rypien? Is it Lock? Is it Driscoll, man? I don't know. I was excited about – I own Jeff Driscoll in, like, most of my dynasty league.
Same.
And I was, like, sick. I got, like, a random quarterback out of nowhere, and now I'm just, like, now I don't have Jeff Driscoll anymore because Rypien's not going to get the start.
they were in his face like all day long. And I played like Bucks defense for DFS because I felt it was a pretty damn good matchup. But like that O-line was getting absolutely fucking destroyed. Like he had no time. And let's get it straight here. Like Jeff Driskel is no, I mean, he's no Russell Wilson or Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson. So he's not going to really get out there and kind of escape the pocket and throw dimes on the run. But yeah, that team looks brutal. That offense looks brutal. If I had to like grab anyone, like I think I might still hang on to Hamler for cheap just to see how he kind of evolves. Like five targets is still a decent amount. And he kind of has that big playability, but yeah, it's a tough offense to get behind, man. I remember we were comparing them to the Chiefs after the draft and look at us now, man.
No. Stop. We weren't comparing them to the fucking Chiefs. We were saying that they were trying to catch. They were a very, very poor man's version of the Chiefs. And we're seeing why being very poor is not a good thing. And that's the Broncos offense. Now, the Lions, Cardinals, 26-23. Lions take a dub. Otherwise, Matt Patricia's job was probably up in the air after this one if he didn't pull one off. So we have Adrian Peterson dominating backfield touches, 22 for 75, like
workhorse.
running like he's the fucking 2009 Adrian Peterson. DeAndre Swift doesn't get a single carry, and he sees two targets, catches one of them for 19 yards. Like
he played five snaps today.
Yeah, like I don't know. I don't even know what to say there. Like he
played five snaps.
So he and DeAndre Hopkins in the same game continue to embarrass me, like to a wild degree. DeAndre goes 10 for 137. Good to see Kenny Galladay back in lineup, though. Ties for the team lead, 7 targets, 6 for 57, and a touchdown. So if you drafted him in third round, you could feel confident starting him going forward. Fuck, man. Like
Marvin Jones, he had that big play called back, that game-sealing touchdown because of a holding. But he looked pretty damn good, too. I think him getting Galladay back was good for that entire offense.
I think for me, another buy low candidate is Kenyon Drake, and we said it last week. It just got to be a week that this guy does something. I mean, his role isn't increasing, but Kyler Murray just takes all his rushing touchdowns. He's not getting receptions. I'm just going to die on the buy Kenyon Drake hill. It's going to be 13 going into the playoffs. I'm like, guys, the trade deadline's over, but convince the owner to drop him because he stinks and then pick him up. But I don't
convince
know.
Convince your commissioner to move good. The fucking trade deadline back so I can get Kenyon Drake.
He's going
to
win you the league, just like last year in that time. I mean, he still played 70% of the snaps, got most of the opportunities. And look, like he didn't score, but he looked decent on a couple plays. But yeah, it's definitely disappointing to not see him on the receiving game. I mean, they're just not really passing to him. Like DeAndre Hopkins is literally, he's the fucking Thanos of targets. Like he's just getting absolutely everything with Christian Kirk out. Like, you know, our boy Andy Isabella had himself a game with two tutties, but it's the freaking DeAndre Hopkins show. That's all Kyler Murray is looking for. Either that or he's running. So it's disappointing, but he's like, you know, you kind of get, you know, a poor man's Derrick Henry.
Alvin Kamara is just so good. It makes him, he just lubes himself up before every game and you just cannot tackle the man. Me and Noah both laugh at the same time when you're like, yeah, Kenyon Drake, you know, he looked good on a couple plays.
That's what I'm saying. Like 25 opportunities to do so.
I know, like, he keeps getting 20 touches and keeps disappointing. And like, I don't really know what the problem is other than maybe he's just not that good. But Andy Isabella looked great. I mean, he's basically what we all wanted Christian Kirk to be, except he's just Andy Isabella. So I actually think, you know, we'll see how long Christian Kirk's going to be out for, but Andy Isabella could definitely be someone that you should keep an eye on because he's got to throw the ball elsewhere outside of, I mean, maybe he doesn't actually have to throw the ball anywhere.
They might have lost one of their O-line, the Saints.
The Saints?
Yeah, he's down.
Well, good. They can put Latavius Murray in the trenches.
Also doesn't matter because Kamara fucking just nobody can tackle him. So
he's so incredible.
Yeah, you could put someone in the back. So I think Andy Isabella is a good pickup there. I think everyone else kind of stinks. Let's move on to the next fucking game. Cowboys Seahawks. This was a very, very, very fun game. Russ just continues to take a shit on everybody. 5 more touchdowns in this one. I read a tweet somewhere. 14 touchdowns through the first 3 games is the most by any quarterback in NFL history. You know what it is? Like, they are passing the ball at an extremely high rate. You know, his pass attempts, while he did hit 40 this week, which is a high number for Russ, like the other 2 weeks while everyone's like, oh, let Russ cook, like he wasn't actually throwing the ball that much. What they were doing is it was just at a very high passing rate, which is what they don't typically do, and it makes the offense so much more efficient, which is why Russ looks so fucking good. And, you know, he's front runner to win the MVP, and I don't think anyone's within like fucking 10 miles of him. DK and Tyler Lockett both do their thing and just dominate through the air. DK Metcalf fucking fumbles the ball like an asshole and lets go another touchdown. But Chris Carson, I guess, is the big injury news here.
That was a dirty play. Did you see it?
Yeah.
The little alligator roll. He like rolled up on
yeah.
him real quick.
Yeah.
Straight barrel roll. Yeah. He just took that shit and was like, your leg's coming with me. And he fucking tried to spin with it. And don't know the severity of it. I'm not even really sure. I didn't see any doctors like tweet about it, what they think it could be. I don't think something like that will cause like a serious tear in any way, but I'll probably just shut the fuck up.
You're a doctor. Diagnose him on the spot. Or we can call a fantasy football counselor and see what he says.
I'm going to say sprained MCL out for 2 to 3 weeks. But I think the bigger pickup here is probably Travis Homer, because Carlos Hyde was kind of useless behind Chris Carson, and Travis Homer seemed to be like the guy that they leaned on down the stretch, although he didn't get that many touches. So it's just something to keep an eye on. And I wouldn't be surprised if Carlos Hyde like took 15 carries next week, but see how severe the Chris Carson injury is. And even if it's a split between Hyde and Travis Homer, it's like, you just want players on this team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, Tyler Lockett, 9 receptions, 100 yards and 3 TDs. DK, 4 receptions, 110 yards. Should have had 2 touchdowns, but had 1 touchdown. I mean, this is the double potential wide receiver one stack that no one really saw coming, right? Like we both said they're very talented. We thought Tyler Lockett was going to be the guy. You know, he obviously still is a baller, but DK Metcalf obviously making a name for himself aside from that Sean Jackson fucking blunder. But this is a good team. This is a good offense, and their defense fucking stinks. Like they cannot.
Jamal Adams got hurt too, right?
Yeah, yeah, they can't stop anyone. Like they can't stop the passing game. I guess they stopped the running game, or Zeke stopped himself, looking like fucking Jordan Howard out there catching passes. You hate to see it. He looked absolutely brutal.
6 for 24 through the air. Yeah, you do hate to see that.
Yeah, so it looked brutal. I mean, but on the flip side, Michael Gallup, man, came back. He's been getting the air yards, finally converted on a couple, looking like a fucking baller. He was a wide receiver one today, by all means. Dak Prescott threw damn near 60 times for 37 completions, almost 500 yards, 472 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Look, I mean, this offense is going to put up points, and they're going to be relevant wide receivers all around between Gallup, CD, who also looked good, and Amari Cooper, who also looked good. So it's going to be an offense that puts up a lot of points. You got to get guys on these teams. And honestly, I think CD Lamb is someone I'm no longer trading away. Like there's very few players where I'm not willing to trade them. But CD Lamb is that person, just because his value right now is not going to reflect even remotely what he's going to be. Like if you thought Adrian Brown had a meteoric rise, like CD Lamb's going to put that one in the rear view. Like the opening that he's had, the way that he's playing, the way he's being used. Trust me when I say this, if you have CD Lamb, just don't trade him. Do not trade him. I have him in the filet league, and there's just like, he's on my taxi and there's no way I'm trading with someone. Like this is how ludicrous it is, like in my mind, right? Like if someone offered me Davante Adams straight up for CD Lamb, I might just turn him down, just mainly because in that league, I don't really need Adams. And I think CD is like just a very secure asset, but that sounds ludicrous. That sounds really stupid. I know people are going to say like, that's fucking dumb.
Yeah.
People are going to say that sounds really fucking dumb. But I'm telling you right now, like just like based on where his value trajectory is going, this is like one of those sure bets for me where I think like his value is going to skyrocket. He's going to be unattainable.
Yeah, he looks incredible. And I've been telling you guys for weeks to pick up Cedric Wilson. He had his breakout party, 5 for 107 and 2 touchdowns. No, but for real, going back to the Seahawks, this passing game is fucking incredible. It was like 3rd and 3. They're like, Jason Myers would need to hit a 50-yard field goal here. Russell Wilson's like up in the press box, throws it 70 yards. DK Metcalf from the other side. That math does not add up at all. But it was like a 40-yard touchdown to DK Metcalf. Like, he doesn't care who's playing defense. He doesn't care what's happening. He's going to lace one down the middle to either DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett. As you said, Mike, this is going to be like 2 wide receiver 1s in this offense. If DK Metcalf put up 2 touchdowns on those like 4 for 111 and 2 touchdowns, like, and Russell Wilson had 6 touchdowns, I mean, they could retire at this point of the year and Russell Wilson would win MVP. And these guys would be top 24 receivers as it is. But that was a great game, very high scoring. Michael Gallup had that breakout party. He almost had another one at the end, but he was like running way too close to the sideline and Dak Prescott couldn't put it in his breadbasket. But I really like all the passing, all the like the top 2 on the Seahawks and the top 3 on the Cowboys, because there's plenty of volume to go around.
Who would you guys rather have right now between DK Metcalf and AJ Brown in Dynasty? Because, you know, we haven't seen AJ Brown because he's been hurt, but we know what he's capable of. And I think that's a definitely a close bet. Like that trio of like AJ Brown, DK Metcalf, Calvin Ridley, that's a tough one.
I think I would take Metcalf at this point, man. Just tying yourself to Russell Wilson is – I don't know if you could, like, have a more valuable position in Dynasty right now.
Yeah. This is
laughed about like the comparison of Julio Jones, but like it's coming to fruition. Like we laughed at the David Montgomery was like the athleticism of Sony Michel, the legs of Saquon Barkley. Like this one's looking legit. He cannot be guarded by anybody.
Yeah, he is elite. This is like the wide receiver version of why we said draft CH, because CH is kind of attached to Patrick Mahomes and gets like that touching upside. I mean, DK Metcalf is attached to what I'm going to call is the best deep ball passer of all time. Yeah, Russ probably is the best deep ball passer.
Have you not watched Justin Herbert for 2 weeks?
bar none. So, he's not scared to throw it. And you saw the coverage. Like, the coverage on Gilmore last week, I went back, looked at it. It was fucking good coverage. Like,
doesn't matter.
It just doesn't matter because Russell Wilson drops a fucking dime.
Dude, every drive, I tweeted this out, like, they're so fun to watch this year because every drive is just – it's one of three things. It's like Chris Carson running super fucking angry, a dart right to Tyler Lockett, or a bomb to DK Metcalf. And like next week, the Seattle coaching staff is going to be so shocked when Chris Carson isn't out there. And then they just continue to do Tyler Lockett, DK, and come away with a win. And they're like, oh shit, like we didn't need to run the ball in order to win. They went by like 45 points. This is going to be a funnel to just these two dudes. And it's going to make beautiful, beautiful fucking babies for fantasy.
Yeah. Even Greg Olsen, like they were looking at him a lot towards the end of the game. They got that clutch third down. He catches everything. I low-key thought it was, what's his name out there? Will Disley. And like, I almost shed a tear. Like, this is the greatest comeback story of all time, but not 40-year-old Greg Olsen, which is also a pretty decent comeback story because I thought he was done after last year.
Okay. So anyone in that game between those five receivers, let's talk redraft real quick. CeeDee Lamb, going back on that point, though, is low-key going to end up with 1,000 yards. If he scored he hasn't scored a touchdown yet. Like, if he scored a touchdown, people will be looking at him so much differently. But, like, he's consistently 60, 50, 100 yards. Like, it's going to be a crazy, crazy statistical season for him because he's consistent as shit, and so is his offense. Like, of these five receivers, would you sell Michael Gallup after this big game? Because I feel like – I don't know. I think I would. In redraft. This is all redraft stuff I'm talking about. Like, I'm keeping Cooper. CD's like, I don't think you'll really be able to sell him for anything right now. Plus, he's not that valuable in redraft. Lockett and Metcalf, if I have them, I'm fucking rolling with them for the rest of the year. But Gallup is the one that I think I would debate.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's tough, right? Like, we always said, like, as soon as CeeDee Lamb got drafted, we're like, yo, this guy's going to be the wide receiver of the future. He's going to usurp Michael Gallup. I did not foresee it happening like this early. I will say, though, Gallup is still getting the air yards, so he's getting those deep targets, the valuable targets. But he's going to be pretty inconsistent.
Did he break up?
Yeah. Mike's just frozen on me. I'm going to take a screenshot because it's a funny-ass face.
Yeah.
Really hard to trade, like, wide receivers after, like, some of these
blocks. Hey, there he goes. Sorry, you just, like, cut out for about 11 seconds.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so you were saying
the last thing I said?
Michael Gallup is getting he's getting a lot of air yards, but he's going to come with a lot of inconsistencies.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you're just not going to be able to trust him that much. But having said that, like, it's really hard to trade, like, wide receivers. That's what I found. Like, to trade, like these, like, wide receiver twos, like, these, like, fringe wide receivers, like, nobody needs them because in redraft, you can just pick them up everywhere. So
this year, more than anything, just, like, really, you know, we talked about it all summer. We're just, like, you need the running backs. You need the running backs. You need the running backs. And, like, I got running backs early, and I'm still trying to, like, sell off some of my wide receivers that I got in the later rounds. Like, I have the team with, like, Thielen, Lockett, Terry McLaurin, Will Fuller, and like nobody wants any part of them. And I'm just like, fuck. I look at their team and I'm like, shit, there's no team that actually needs a fucking wide receiver. Like, none of them have value.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for Michael Gallup too, it's like the price that you're going to sell him for isn't going to be worth any type of return, because if you do play him in your flex, there's always that off chance that he puts up 6 for 130 in a touchdown because he's being used deep down the field. Dallas Cowboys offense can't really stop anybody and they just keep airing the ball out. So I just probably, like, if you can get a decent enough, like, wide receiver to return, like, if you can get a Tyler Boyd in return for him, I'd go for it, but I just don't see that happening. I don't think people are really buying into a one-off performance from Michael Gallup and going to pay a price reasonable enough to ship him off.
All right. That's going to wrap up the last game, and you heard it here first. According to Noah, Greg Olsen, wide receiver one in the Seattle offense.
Cedric Wilson. That's what I called out.
No, Cedric Wilson, wide receiver one. Greg Olsen, wide receiver one in Seattle. Both guys under the radar you could pick up and start immediately. Okay, that's it. So, again, this will be our normal Wednesday show. We will be going back to our normal regularly scheduling. Tomorrow, I will be going live on YouTube to talk waiver wire and more of an in-depth recap with, you know, snaps and air yards and that kind of nonsense that we don't have access to yet for this week. Make sure you are subscribed to the Bunk Bed Breakdowns YouTube channel because they're doing a ton of Dynasty shit. day in and day out. And the waiver wire article will be out on Patreon tomorrow afternoon. Our dynasty rankings will be out October 1st, also Patreon. So patreon.com/BDGE. That's it. Hit the thumbs up if you enjoyed. Subscribe to the channel if you're new, and we'll see y'all next Wednesday.
Don't forget to watch the Market Watch Mondays, because we're launching that in our regular scheduled time, because we don't fucking disappoint at Big Dog's headquarters every single week. So you're going to get two just times of videos. Open up your fucking brain. Got big facts on this one, big facts on that one, big facts all around.
Are you done?
'Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.